Welcome to podcast number 3, I believe. And we've covered the nature of space-time. We've covered dark energy. If you've listened to the first couple podcasts and so far, this all makes sense. Then applying what we visualize in our head, we can say that, as an example, and I'm gonna ballpark my numbers here. Our planet is, let's say it's moving around the sun something like 30 kilometers per second. The sun is moving somewhere in the neighborhood of 200 kilometers per second around Sagittarius A star. Sagittarius A star and the rest of the local group is moving somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 kilometers per second, plus or minus 150 kilometers per second. So there's a bit of room for error because there's some unknowns in the mix. We have been unable to confirm yet the speed that the Great Attractor is moving or the direction it's heading, but over time, we will. The point being that each successive parent frame of reference has the opportunity to see us moving faster relative to that parent frame of reference than we would necessarily see within our own solar system, let's say. So if you continue going upwards, the aggregation of the total relative velocity inside each successive parent frame of reference will slowly grow larger over time. The higher up you go, the amount of that increase will slowly get smaller and smaller and smaller to almost negligible amounts relative to us. But at that scale factor, it will still, add up. That means that you can continue going up to a higher and higher frame of reference until at some point our entire solar system looks like it's moving at the speed of light. Or really, really close to it. Okay? There are frames of reference so far removed from our scale factor that relative to that parent frame of reference, we look like we are moving close to the speed of light. There are also times where two of these pockets will intersect because pockets of space-time are constantly colliding. Complete random chaos following the laws of physics, but pockets of all different sizes are constantly colliding. When they collide, you can have a swath or a path of each pocket that overlaps the part of the other pocket. The two pockets will almost always pass right through each other. But there will be some number of collisions. And if within these two pockets that pass by, you happen to have two stellar nurseries, lots of black holes and neutron stars and massive stars, whatever, colliding, there is a potential for a relative kinetic energy that approaches twice the speed of light. We don't understand all the physics of superluminal collisions, but over time, we can develop models, simulations, that take into account the possible different ways that superluminal collisions may interact. In the next podcast, we're going to go into all the separate reasons why I believe successive collision theory is a better answer to the formation of our visible universe than the Big Bang theory. Let's see, we got 4 minutes. Can I do it in this one? I got 6 minutes. Okay, maybe we'll try and do it all in this one. So, successive collision theory believes that two large pockets passing through each other have the potential to have relative kinetic energies that approach twice the speed of light. So you can have black holes colliding with neutron stars, colliding with, suns like ours, or even planets colliding at relative speeds in excess of the speed of light, 1.5, 1.6, 1.7, 1.8, 1.999, the speed of light. Possibly even faster, because within our own frame of reference, we see what appears to be things moving faster than the speed of light, but that's relative to us. Relative to the parent frame of reference, they're not. They're moving at much slower speeds compared to a shared parent. Okay? But there is that potential increase in the relative kinetic energy that could be related to the expansion of space-time within bodies. So I've always considered the maximum kinetic energy release to be equal to 2C or lower. However, I have not ruled out, now that we kind of understand that there are things moving at what appears to be, you know, faster than the speed of light, based on their you know, relative motion within bodies, it becomes potentially possible that these things could collide at speeds in excess of the speed of light. Now, if that happens, you're going to have some bodies that will barely clip each other. So there's still going to be a lot of heat and a lot of energy released, but the majority is retained by the object that collided, and it moves along its merry way. But there may still be some collisions with very tiny little fragments of spotty energy. Then you're going to have collisions that are more head-on. So you could have something that collides directly head-on. When that happens at twice the speed of light, or 1.8 the speed of light, you are going to have an immense release of both heat and energy, mass converting almost directly into hot photons, and then plasma. But the angular momentum is not the what could have been angular momentum turns into an increased amount of energy release. And for that reason, you can have two bodies colliding, and the amount of energy that is released can cool down to produce more matter than the original two bodies started with. So we have a potential for a mass of five and another mass of five to collide, and when it all cools down, you have 11 or 12 or 13 masses instead of just 10. And that is because there's no real conversion of the two angular momentum. You also have bodies that will collide up, down, left, right of each other. However, because the initial path of those two bodies had a relative trajectory and a relative velocity, we would expect many of them to have a similar type of collision. So the heat output would be very similar. You know, your dead-on collisions would be the hottest, then the non-dead-on but fairly significant ones would be the next closest. And we're going to need a whole nother podcast to really get into all the different observations that successive collision theory helps us validate. But for now, if there were these two pockets that pass by each other, intersecting paths, they likely had many, many more collisions than just the localized area that formed, our visible universe. There were almost certainly siblings of our universe created at the same time. And there very likely may have been a parent, multiple parents, cousins, maybe even a grandparent frame of reference, all playing follow the leader, nested succession, all created from the same set of collisions, the succession of collisions that spawned our visible universe. So the next podcast will be a part two of this, and we're going to go into all the details next. Okay? Enjoy. Have a good day. Live long and prosper. May the force be with you. 42.